Hey there, IndyCar fans. This is Nathan Brown, your motorsports insider with the Indianapolis Star, here with my guest host, Connor Daly, for another episode of IndyCar Weekly. Here to recap a really big weekend, not just in IndyCar, but in motorsports in general. We had the doubleheader weekend at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway between IndyCar and NASCAR. We'll dive into IndyCar's own doubleheader they have going on this weekend at Road America and take your questions as well. So Connor, first, the biggest question I think everyone wants to know after seeing that you lost 12 pounds in that hot and muggy Indy GP on Saturday. How are you doing recovery-wise?
Yeah, you know, I'm fine. And the funny thing about that is the 12 pounds was almost, you know, that was kind of a low estimate. You know, I had had so much water and so much fluids kind of intaking in, and I kind of weighed those, you know, the science behind it was not entirely you know, thought out, but after talking to my trainer and kind of what we looked at with how much water I took in and how much I still, you know, how much lighter I still was that night, you know, that's kind of what we came up with. So it'd be really interesting to get a scale right there, right after the race this weekend, just to see. But yeah, it was hot. It was very, very difficult. It was without a doubt the most challenging race of my entire career. You know, to this point, and I have not really seen, you know, guys like Joseph Newgarden or Simon Pagenaud, you know, struggling after races, or at least talking to them personally. I mean, obviously they had decent days. Simon was on the podium and Scott was on the podium, but I think for sure a lot of the drivers thought that, you know, with the higher levels of heat in the cockpit, it's certainly presenting a new challenge. So, it's also tough. I think people forget that was the first road course race that we've done all year, and the first race is always tough physically. So I'm thinking, you know, we'll feel a little bit better hopefully this weekend. But there's two races, so a lot of us are really diving into, you know, the physical side of what training has looked like this week, what a hydration plan is looking like, you know, what kind of IV support can you get maybe after the race, you know, for the next one. So there's a lot that are kind of, there's been a lot this week that, you know, I've personally thought of to try and figure out how we can prepare for, you know, two doubleheaders in a row. But yeah, it was a tough race physically, mentally, and yeah, everything was on the line there at the end of the race for sure to just get to the finish.
How do you, because I think of it, a runner in my own respect, so, you know, I've done some half marathons and marathons, and there's always that idea of, you know, when you're training for something, you have your really hard runs maybe once a week. There's that aspect of training and continuing to condition yourself versus recovery. When you have, you know, this I guess less than a week or about a week or so between this really hot race on Saturday going into a doubleheader weekend, how are you balancing this week between training for, you know, and keeping your conditioning that you've already built up versus just trying to recover from what you said was a really, really tough couple hours in the car on Saturday?
Well, I mean, we hit it Monday hard. I mean, obviously, Saturday night, I was a barely functioning human. I was very much, you know, trying to celebrate the 4th of July, but realistically, you know, I was not very useful. I met up with Noah Gragson after the Xfinity race. You know, he was staying at my house Saturday and Sunday night. So we were hanging out and kind of, you know, trying to enjoy a bit of the 4th of July. And I was struggling. I mean, I was, after the race, I had laid down in the truck for potentially 30 minutes probably. And, you know, I was just struggling, just struggling to kind of get up. So after that, though, you know, we pounded some fluids and felt okay Sunday, and then got right back into it Monday. You know, I wanted to train harder than ever and get some heat training involved. You know, this week I've been running in my Nomex through the city to try and kind of up. You know, it's been 90 degrees still here in Indy every day, and so I've been running through the streets after we train in the morning at the gym. You know, with my Nomex on to try and get some more heat training in, and then obviously, kind of going through a pretty extensive hydration plan for this week. because not only are we doing double headers, but we're practicing and qualifying on the same day as the race. So this is without a doubt going to be the biggest physical challenge ever, I think, in IndyCar. And it's going to be really interesting. So just trying to stay as ready as possible, you know, taking in as many fluids as I can all week this week, but also really stepping up the training to make sure that we're doing as much as we can. But without a doubt, the body is going to have one race under its belt already, and so we're going to be feeling probably a little bit better after the first race. But then hopefully, you know, we can get as much recovery as possible in before race two.
Yeah, it's almost kind of like a combination of what you guys did at Texas with the whole aspect of a one-day show versus the heat aspect of a road course race. Certainly a very tough weekend ahead of you guys, and I know the aero screen has been a hot topic on, no pun intended, a hot topic in all of this. We've heard from guys, you know, that, you know, maybe you'd like to see just some improved cooling aspects of the car. I know there's maybe some additional work that IndyCar can do on just generally adapting the aero screen. But from your perspective, how much of this is just going to kind of come down to you guys having to just know what you're going to have to go through and just really prepare for it more than actually adapting any part of the car for the conditions that you guys are under?
You know, I really don't know what can be done. It's tough to think about. I know already they're potentially, you know, the Arai helmet cooler or the Arai helmet vent system has a little bit more to offer the helmet than the Bell one right now. So I think right now we're kind of working through putting the Arai helmet cooling system on the Bell helmet, just to kind of as a quick fix for now. And I don't really know how that's going to work out, because obviously it's not designed for a Bell helmet, so we're kind of like, you know, gypsy rigging it a little bit. But I really don't know what else they can do, to be honest. I mean, without making it super complex, and then the car is already very difficult to get out of. Like, it's very difficult to get out of. And so if you're going to put a bunch more hoses in that we have to disconnect, then it becomes more dangerous, I think, to try and just get out of if you're in a situation where you've got to get out fast. So I'm just very curious. I don't know what the options are. I think right now they're trying to move the drink bottle system to a place where it can be a little bit cooler for longer, because really about lap 15 or 20, the drink bottle, whatever you got in there, is boiling hot. So that's not efficient at all. So I'm not sure what's going to be done, but something definitely does have to be done, because it can be hotter. You know, the Indy GP, was it hot? Absolutely. But it can definitely be hotter than that in Indiana, in Iowa, in the Midwest in general. So there's going to be some questions that we got to have answered here, you know, as we keep rolling through this busy schedule.
Yeah, it's certainly something that'll be interesting to see how it plays out at Road America, but was already something that lots of folks mentioned heading into an late August Indianapolis 500, where you guys are in the car for 3 hours or more. Will be interesting to see how IndyCar continues to not only adapt that piece, but adapt the cooling systems as well. As we move on into, you know, more talking a little bit more about this race in depth, you spent some time up toward the front of the field with the two-stop system you guys were going on, ultimately maybe derailed a little bit by that accident that happened, I think it was on lap 36 with Oliver Askew in turn 14. When you guys are feeling like you are really maybe going to end up turning out pretty well in this race, what did that crash do for you, and how were you guys able to respond to just kind of something that was totally out of your hands in that aspect?
Well, it was tough for us, because we were committed to the two-stop strategy from the start. You know, we wanted to take advantage of the new reds at the end and save enough fuel in the first two stints to be able to do that, because we had really struggled on pace for the primary tire, the black tire. For some reason, our balance, you know, even in qualifying, we were useless on black tires. And then as soon as we put on the reds, I could really get some lap time out of it. And that obviously showed in qualifying, considering, you know, we were pretty close to making that fast six. But it just everything about it was tough for us because I was on the black tires when the yellow came out. We were still in the process of saving fuel, and it brought everyone close, you know, who were on reds and who were kind of more in a bit of an attack mode. So it was a tough spot for us to be in. You know, we knew we were struggling with pace on blacks, and we knew we had to save fuel. It was tough. Even when attacking a little bit on blacks, we just didn't have the pace that we needed. And sure enough, we still had to save fuel at the end as well. The way the pit stop sequence worked out, you know, we couldn't even take as much advantage of the reds at the end as we wanted, because we kind of had to pit early on the blacks in the middle stint because we were getting, you know, taken advantage of. So everything just kind of went awry when that yellow came out. And it was a shame because we were definitely in a position for, you know, a top three type day, or at least, you know, fighting for that at the end. But, you know, it is what it is. If we can, that's our first race together. And then the fact that we were running up front all day and you know, did we fade a little bit? Yeah, absolutely. And just because we had to save fuel, you know, it is what it is. We weren't able to take advantage of our optimum situation, which was the new reds at the end. You know, it is what it is. If a bad day for us is 12th, you know, we'll take it. We'll keep working on improving. It was just our first race together, so we gotta keep working on things.
That's a great point. A lot of people probably may not remember your first day in an Ed Carpenter Racing car to finish in the top half of the field. Now be sitting seventh in the series point standings after two races. What do you feel like just from a big picture standpoint, when you see that seven next to your name ahead of a lot of really solid drivers from some of the bigger teams, how do you feel two races into the 14 race schedule this year so far?
Well, we just got to keep being smart about things. I mean, we're now into it. You know, we're two races in. In a really short amount of time, we're going to be another four races in already. You know what I mean? We got the doubleheader this weekend, doubleheader next weekend. Then you'll be halfway through the season, essentially. So, you know, we gotta make sure that this weekend, you know, if we have a good day on day one, we got to make sure we follow that up and take advantage of whatever we've got that's going good for us in race two as well. Or if we struggle race one and, you know, we have to kind of sit through another 12, hopefully not. Hopefully a struggle for us is still the top 10. But, you know, we can improve that for day two and then potentially come back with more points day two. So there's a lot we got to think about. We're still pushing for wins. We got to be able to, you know, get up front and continue to qualify up front. You know, I was really happy with where we qualified for our first time out together at NDGP. And we obviously would love to make the Fast Six at Road America. Well, not the Fast Six, I guess, because the qualifying is a little bit different. But, you know, we want to qualify up front again. And as long as you qualify up front, it's much easier to race up front. So, you know, we want to make sure qualifying goes well and we take advantage of that.
Your teammate for the first time this weekend, Rinus VK, finishes fifth. Really solid rebound from him after his early crash and getting taken out of the race at Texas on his first IndyCar race and first major oval race of his IndyCar season. What did you see out of Rinus, not only how he finished this past weekend, but the preparation from him leading up to it?
Well, I mean, we know Rinus is going to be fast on the road courses. He's a fast driver. He's very talented. And I wasn't surprised at all. I mean, you got to think how new he is still to the red tires. So qualifying is going to be a struggle for rookies in general because of how difficult it is to kind of get the lap out of red tires. But he followed it up with a good race. They were very committed early on because, you know, Rinus really wanted to push the whole race, so they pitted early and, you know, pit early, pit often to get on, you know, good tires and go quick, and they did it, and they made that strategy work. So he did a great job, and, you know, I'm not surprised at all. I think he's going to be up there quite a lot, and, you know, hopefully we can both be, you know, battling for podiums here, you know, very soon.
Another thing, and a, you know, big part of this weekend, of course, was Scott Dixon's continued domination of the rest of the field. Now sits almost 30 points clear of second place Simon Pagenaud in the points race, won Saturday's race by almost 20 seconds after winning by more than 4 seconds at Texas. That included a late race restart. What are your thoughts on what Dixon and that Ganassi team have been able to do so far after these first two races of the year?
Well, to be honest, I saw this coming. Michael Cannon is such a powerhouse engineer. He's such an incredible human being to have in your corner. And the fact that he's with Scott Dixon now is absolutely unbelievable. It's going to be a challenge to beat those guys. But the fact, you know, I followed Scott the entire first stint of that race and really thought that, you know, that was a nice thing to do. Obviously, he was on black tires. I was on used reds. But, you know, they made the right strategy calls. And that's a big part of this race. So is it Scott and Michael? Absolutely. But it's also, you know, Mike Hull and that whole group. They're so good at what they do that they're very hard to beat. And now I think they're going to be tougher than ever. So, you know, sometimes racing can get difficult. You know, Scott has had some random stuff happen to him before in the past. So as in racing, there's going to be, you know, bumps in the road for sure. But, you know, for the rest of us, we got to make sure that we beat those guys. And we cannot let Scott get, you know, too far ahead in the championship. And we'll have to see what happens. He's obviously good everywhere. So Road America is going to be good, I'm sure. But you know, we'll see what happens. I know that, you know, I think this season will change continuously as we continue to do work together and every driver continues to work with their teams or their new environments that they're in. And right now the results have been very interesting. Has Scott won both races? Absolutely. But the rest of the field has been kind of all over the map. You know, you had Zach Veach with a great race at Texas, and you had, you know, guys like me and Ed up there as well, and then guys like Rossi who have yet to finish a race, it seems like. And you know Rossi's going to come back. You know, I think Rossi's going to win both races this weekend, to be honest. I think Alex is about to have a bit of a, you know, a wildly aggressive, you know, comeback weekend. But the season's been up and all over the place. And, you know, you've got Rinus and Ericsson up in the top six at the IndyGP, and so you've got, you know, all kinds of people all over the place, and that's what's kind of exciting about IndyCar right now.
Yeah, I think you make a really good point about Rossi. I mean, I know he sits down 23rd and tied for 22nd in the points, but Road America is a place that he performed incredibly well last year, won by, I think, nearly 30 seconds. I had a chance to talk to him yesterday, and you get the sense that, you know, I think it's definitely a good thing if you're going to have two really frustrating races to start off the year. The fact that he had absolutely no control over either of those incidents, and frankly his team didn't even have any control over what happened to him in the first race. It was just a matter of not being able to have the Honda engine techs on the grid, something that IndyCar has now gone and changed moving forward. I know they had a fuel pressure issue that really plagued them all weekend this past weekend, and they're headed to Road America now just with a completely new car, trying to take out any chance that what hurt them last weekend could linger on into this one. I can envision him just kind of running pretty freely and aggressively, as you mentioned. And when Alexander Rossi gets aggressive and gets motivated, I mean, we saw it last year at the Indy 500, even though he came up just short. That's got to be a frightening thing. And if you have maybe a guy like Scott Dixon gets reeled back in a little bit, if Rossi can find some traction here this weekend, these next two weekends are going to be so much about momentum. And if you can find momentum, no matter where you sit in the standings after these first two races, I think you could put yourself right back in the thick of things for sure.
Absolutely. And yeah, I picked Alex in both races for Fantasy IndyCar this weekend because I think he's going to have a strong one. You know, Colton was obviously very fast there last year, and you know, that'll be interesting to see, you know, how they continue to develop. But yeah, man, the momentum over the next 2 weeks is super important. I mean, there are a lot of points on the table these next 2 weekends. So, you know, we have a goal of you know, trying to get some wins, but, you know, realistically is to come out of here mistake-free and continue to put points on the board. And, you know, once we get through these next 2 weeks, you'll really have a good idea of what's going on in the championship. But then again, there's still a lot to go, so we'll have a good idea though.
Mm-hmm. Before we wrap up the Indy GP, I know one big topic of conversation was Roger Penske unveiling some new renovations to the track. I know you were there on a really short time frame, but did you have any chance to take in any parts of the track that you were in that you could notice that Roger's hand and vision had been on in the short time you were around IMS this past weekend?
Well, the bathrooms are clean. Let me tell you, the bathrooms are really clean. That's something that I can guarantee you that. But it was awesome, man. I mean, it felt so nice to be back at the track. I mean, the track is just such a great place in general. I mean, was it a shame to be there without fans? Absolutely. We miss everyone. We wish everyone was there. I thought it was really cool. You know, when I left the track, basically in the middle of the Xfinity race on Saturday, you know, to see the fans outside by the fence and people kind of parked out there, you know, hanging out, that was really cool. I mean, people are, you know, we wish everyone could be in there, obviously. It's a tough situation for sure, but yeah, there's a lot at the track that I think people can be excited about for the future. And the sound system got an upgrade as well. So whoever was cranking the playlist out this weekend did a great job. Some fancy tunes were pumping through the racetrack. So there was a lot of good stuff going on there, I think, for the future.
You mentioned you got a chance to at least watch a little bit of that Xfinity race. I know you're friends with some of those guys, including Noah. What were your thoughts on the exciting race that those guys were able to put together on that road course? I know that was a big topic of conversation, whether the Cup cars might move there at some point, and that seems even still at this point pretty unlikely. But I think it seemed like almost universally a lot of positive feedback from those Xfinity guys on that road course, giving the NASCAR fans maybe a little bit of a different flavor this year and years to come.
Well, I thought it was awesome racing. I mean, the racing was fantastic. The last few laps of that race was awesome. So I think it went really well. I hope it's a success for the future as well. I hope we can continue to do this more often, because I think those cars raced really well at the road course. And I think the guys had a lot of fun. So it was something that I think everyone was just curious to see how it would go, and I think it went great. So great race, you know, great to see AJ Allmendinger, Chase Briscoe, Noah, those guys all battle it out. And, you know, I would like to have the ability to watch it a little bit closer, like, you know, go to their pit lane wall, you know, and just have the freedom to kind of interact with the drivers a little bit more. But yeah, hopefully we can do that more in the future.
Mm-hmm. As we move on to Road America this weekend, and I know you participated in a handful of doubleheaders at Detroit in years past, but when you start to look at just all of the preparation that goes into a doubleheader, certainly following a race weekend so closely as it does with the Indy GP, talk a little bit about just the heightened importance of you know, not making any mistakes and not making this weekend a big headache for the guys on your crew, maybe going from Saturday to Sunday if you happen to have an incident out there on the course.
Yeah, it's gonna be tough on the guys still. I mean, there's so much that can happen. We just, you know, that's again, mistake free. You gotta be mistake free, but I know the guys are ready to work no matter what happens. We want to keep the issues to a minimum, but again, you can't miss a race. You know what I mean? You lose so many points if that happens, and you got to make sure you're ready to go. So again, it's something you think about in the back of your head. But you know, our guys are definitely rolling now. It's one of those things that everyone's in gear, everyone's ready to you know, keep the party going here and keep the races running. But you know, I think everyone will be ready to have a nice little day off after these next 2 weeks.
Yeah, we'll have at least a couple weeks between Iowa and Mid-Ohio. Certainly will be a welcomed little mini vacation maybe for you guys. All right, well, we'll go on and take some of the questions that we got from folks on Twitter. Let's take a look here. First one comes from Michael Petrar on Twitter. He asks, has the beginning of the season being postponed and then limited to essential personnel had any negative impact on courting potential sponsors? Adds, I'd also figure that the combined IMS weekend would have been a big missed opportunity in that sense as well.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's kind of the price we're paying right now, in this whole pandemic situation, because part of what is the best, sell about IndyCar is having people to track and having people at our events and interacting with them. So, yeah, it's hard. And there's no other explanation other than we just can't wait for next year. So hopefully we can continue to survive, and the teams can do the best job they can with what we've got this year, and hopefully just come back stronger next year.
Talked a little bit of about strategy already, but we got another strategy question here from Brett Keys. Says, Connor, at what point does a strategist decide to abandon strategy like Dixon did? He says that they stated on the broadcast he was planning to go just two stops like you guys did and eventually changed to three. Do you think it was purely based on speed he was losing to guys on a three pit stop move?
I think really what happens there is, Rinus was the first to pit, and Rinus got out of the pits and was running quite fast. So, other teams pay attention to that, and they see kind of what pace is possible on when you get to red tires. And I could see Dixon running that three stop pretty early on, because if you're starting on blacks, it's pretty much, almost a guarantee that you're going to do that three stopper. But yeah, it was, everything changes constantly. And, we were really, really committed to that two stop very early. So it still looked like it was going to be fine. When Dixon pitted in front of me, I had clear track to kind of continue to just save fuel and keep working on things. And that's what we needed. So, it's one of those things that changes every lap. You guys are always, our guys on the stand are thinking about things constantly. How is it going to affect us? Should we have pitted under yellow? Probably not. Should we, if we would have caught it just before it went full course yellow, we think through all those situations, but realistically, there wasn't much we could have done differently. So sometimes it's just the way the cards fall. And sometimes you get lucky, sometimes you don't.
Another question on the nutrition and hydration aspect of all of this from Lance Snyder. Says, Connor, you stated you lost 12 pounds during the race. How long did that take to recover that weight? And with back-to-back weekends of double races, are you changing your nutrition leading into them and during the race weekend to keep your blood sugar at optimal levels?
Yeah, well, I mean, the diabetes thing isn't a problem for me. I mean, I find that easy to control at this point now. So, I'm very lucky, I guess, in that case. But going through a pretty serious hydration plan for this weekend, sitting down with a hydration expert and a kind of a nutritionist for this weekend is definitely happening. A lot of drivers are doing that. A lot of drivers are doing sweat tests this week to kind of see what level their bodies are at. But it really just took me about till Monday. Monday I was still sore, but Monday I hit the gym very, very hard and was able to kind of break some personal records there. So it felt pretty good. But I was taking in a lot of water Saturday and Sunday, a lot of after the race, all day Sunday, taking in some, some hydration, powders and stuff like that. So, we're definitely taking it to another level this week, though. There's been a lot of work put into it, so it should be interesting to see how everyone shows up this weekend.
Andrew Stewart asks, again, on a little bit more on the fuel strategy. Is there a specific point or event during a race that triggers flipping to a fuel-saving strategy? Do you always start on a push strategy, or have you started races out with a fuel mileage plan before?
Yeah, I've started races on all kinds of different plans. We started this race for sure two stop. It's going to be a fuel saving event, but the only thing that flips your strategy is either a yellow or some drastic pace change by other people who have pitted early. So there's a lot that can affect it, and that's why you've got really smart people who are paid to do their job on the stand to kind of help you with that. But realistically, the fuel saving stuff is hard. It's annoying because you can't push. You have to, you have to save that fuel, and you might have to sacrifice a position or two just to make sure that you finish the race. And that's kind of where we were at. I mean, we were running in the top 10, and Hinch and Sato were catching me, and I just, I just couldn't hang on to the throttle long enough to keep them behind me if I was going to, you know, have enough fuel to finish. So, you know, we crossed the line just about running out of gas. So it was, you know, it was very, very close. And that was tough because I had new reds on as well, so couldn't really take advantage of that. I think we easily could have stayed in the top 10 had we had just a hair more fuel. But, you know, it is what it is.
Karen Hollenbeck wants to know a little bit more on the standings. How does it feel to be seventh in the point standings knowing that you'll get to run every race this year?
Well, I mean, we've only done two races, so there's not a lot to be super happy with yet. You know, we're gonna figure this out as we keep going here. We're gonna learn more and more every weekend, and that's what's exciting to me is the fact that it's so early on into my relationship with ECR, and it's so early on to, you know, what we're starting with Carlin again, that we've got a lot of momentum to still, you know, to still find, and we've got a lot to still learn about each other. So the fact that we're not, you know, starting in a hole and trying to come out of that as we continue to grow together is really cool. So it is exciting. I'm pumped to, you know, just to get back to the track. I mean, the fact that we don't have to wait as long to get back and get things going again is super awesome. Because I can't wait to get going and just get back out in the field of battle with the rest of the boys.
AJ Digby asks, you might not be allowed to share this, but you talked about SPS under caution with your wheel on the radio. Is that just engine power modes? And also, do you have an idea how much more fuel efficient the Hondas have versus the Chevys?
Yeah, I don't know how much I can say about that stuff, but we obviously do have a lot of wheel settings that we can run to kind of help us save tires, to help us save fuel. SPS isn't necessarily having to do with fuel, but it is something that helps us, you know, in the car. So there are a few things that people won't know about but that, you know, we obviously have in the Chevy camp that we can use. And, you know, Honda's got very similar things as well. Everyone calls stuff different things, but, you know, I'm not really sure what the fuel mileage difference is. I'm obviously super happy with Chevrolet and to be with that group of people. It did seem like there was, you know, I think, you know, there was a little bit, it seemed like Graham was having a little bit easier of a time saving than I was. So we might have to look at that and see kind of how that differentiates. You know, I was looking at some data, and there did seem to be a little bit of an advantage to, you know, to however he was saving fuel. But, you know, my technique seemed to be better, but we weren't quite saving as much. So there's something there, so we'll see. But obviously, again, just race one, so everyone's still learning, everyone's still kind of getting into it. But yeah, there's a lot that we use on the wheel, thanks to the, you know, the manufacturer Chevrolet, you know, to help the drivers. And you know, we're obviously gonna use those as much as possible. And if you hear something you don't understand on the radio, it's probably because it's meant to confuse you, or it's meant to it's meant to throw you off. So yeah.
Some couple good questions here from Aaron Bearden. One of them, based on how physically challenging Indy was, what do you foresee challenge-wise for competitors both at Road America and Iowa? I know there's some folks that think maybe Road America might be more difficult because it's a road course, but Iowa, I know a lot of folks have also said, is oftentimes the most physically demanding track on the course. So maybe talk a little bit about just kind of the differences between those.
Yeah, I think Iowa's going to be the hardest race on the schedule for sure. You know, the doubleheader there, without a doubt, that's the most physically demanding place that we've visited, I think, all year. So, you know, we'll see. But we will also have, you know, three races in a pretty short amount of time to kind of get our bodies to that, you know, that level of physicality for that long of a race distance. So, so we'll see. Yeah, this weekend is, again, probably going to be quite tough. Is it going to be difficult? Absolutely. We got practice, qualifying, and racing all in the same day. So, you know, we're going to be back to probably, you know, 5,000 calorie burning days, which is going to be pretty aggressive. So that's going to be quite a weekend. We'll see what happens. I look forward to kind of measuring it all on my little whoop band here, my heart rate monitor. But yeah, it's just something to pay attention to. You know, being physically, you know, if you're physically struggling, you know, it's easier to make mistakes. So if you see crashes or things happen late in the race, that's probably, you never know, that could be because people are just physically deflated. So see how that affects everyone.
He asks, kind of a follow-up to that, what regular circuits do you think could be the hardest in the future outside of Road America, Iowa, and the Indy GP? And says he's particularly curious about street circuits like Detroit or Toronto, knows that they are not on the schedule this year, but wonder how difficult they might be, just given the current situation of the AeroSpring.
I don't think Detroit's as tough as Toronto. I think Mid-Ohio is a very difficult one, because Mid-Ohio, you know, historically not a lot of yellows there, so that's usually a long race under green. But yeah, Toronto is always a tough one for sure, and it can be hot as well. But I don't know, man. I mean, all the races are tough at this point, but for sure, I think the top three physical difficult tracks are going to be the Iowas, potentially Toronto, Iowa, Toronto, maybe Mid-Ohio. You know, tracks like that for sure, I think are some of the most difficult, without a doubt.
And we got a final question here from Chris Bishop. We've talked a good amount already about this two-stop versus three-stop strategy, but he says, please go a little bit more in depth on the step-by-step process of trying to decide between a two- or three-stop strategy, and says, explain like I'm a three-year-old.
Well, I mean, the race is a certain amount of laps, and we know after doing practice and qualifying how much fuel we burn, you know, going full throttle and full attack. So we know the length of a stint, you know, using those numbers, that we need to be able to do full chat, full throttle, full attack. And, you know, if you do that, that's a three stopper. However, if you save fuel, and you potentially extend that, there's a window of making it a two stop race. So it's, you know, not all races have that. Like, you know, Road America we're going into, that's pretty much a three stopper. Like you can't do it in two, unless you get a ton of yellow flag laps. Is the two-stopper usually harder? Yes, because you really have to be religious about saving fuel. In the Indy GP case, for example, you know, when I passed Askew on lap one, really, as soon as I passed him, you know, I tried to push Dixon for about a lap, but I realized I immediately had to get into a leaner map. Leaner fuel map to save fuel, because I wasn't going to make the strategy work. And it's hard to think, you know, right at the start, you got to back off the throttle already, but you did, and we had to. So, you know, the hardest part about that is still defending from the guys potentially behind you who are not on a two-stop and who are pushing, you know, all out. So that's kind of the art of IndyCar racing right now, is sometimes you got to be able to save the fuel to make things work. And you don't see it at the beginning, but it all comes into play at the end. We've seen Dixon take advantage of fuel strategy before. We've seen all kinds of drivers take advantage of fuel strategy before. They kind of wander around through the middle of the race. They're never really in super attack mode, but all of a sudden everyone's made their pit stops and you're like, well, how did this guy get in the lead? It's like, well, because he made one less pit stop than you did. So you got to just think about all those things. And, you know, we have a lot of information to kind of be able to choose one or the other. And then if you get a yellow early on, that changes things as well. And then it also depends on, you know, what tire is good. If the red tires are terrible, you know, you gotta get those off as soon as possible. So if you start on reds and you get a yellow lap one, boom, guess what? You're pitting immediately, getting those off, and then you don't have to worry about, you know, a short stint later on in the race because of, you know, tire wear. So, you know, obviously our weakest tire over the weekend was black tires, so we were hoping to make that stint as short as possible. But we had to cut it too short because of the way the yellow worked out. We were under attack. So there's a lot of ways that they can work out. And it's a lot of it's above my pay grade, but I'm happy to do whatever the guys on the stand tell me to do.
I'll even ask a follow-up question to that, because I don't think I got talked about maybe enough this weekend. I think maybe not everyone may have noticed that this race actually was bumped down from an 85-lap race that had been run the last several years down to 80. And I'd be curious to know if you felt like maybe that either you know this for certain or maybe you heard this from some folks, if you felt like that was maybe done specifically for this purpose to maybe shake up the fuel strategy a little bit and give guys maybe that window to possibly try and go two versus basically just about having, you know, almost everyone have to go three if you felt like that was the case?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that is a huge reason why, you know, we could have done a two-stop strategy. IndyCar looks at that as well. They look at, all right, how has this race distance affected our actual product of racing? And sometimes adjusting the laps in the race, you know, will adjust how strategies work out. So everything works hand in hand, and that's why, you know, anytime things like that change, we look at how strategies can change, and we just go from there.
All right. Well, I think that is it for us here on this episode of IndyCar Weekly. Certainly have a lot more content to follow on IndyStar.com covering this weekend's leading up to Saturday. That first race is at 5 p.m. on NBC Sports. You've got the second race of the weekend on Sunday. I believe the broadcast starts at 12 noon on NBC, and that race will start around 12:30. You can certainly follow me on Twitter, watch those races online, and hopefully you'll read our coverage on IndyStar.com as we get going into another really wild IndyCar weekend with another one to come next weekend at Iowa. So for Nathan Brown, we have Connor Daly here. Thanks so much, Connor, again for the time in the midst of this busy week. And we will look forward to seeing how things go in these next two races for you guys at ECR this weekend.
Absolutely. Yeah, it should be a fun one. We'll see how it goes.
Thanks for listening.